Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and we're expecting to get a little taste of fall this weekend across the state. I can't wait. It'll be crisp. It'll be football weather with the Detroit Lions opening up the 2024 campaign in front of what I'm sure will be a raucous crowd on Sunday night against the Rams. But let this beautiful weather serve as a reminder that, as I just said, the word campaign, we're just 2 months away from Election Day. In fact, in Michigan, we've got no reason vote by mail, and you can register to get your ballot by contacting your city clerk's office. And clerks have probably already contacted you on to whether or not you want to vote by mail. We've got early voting in Michigan at polling places across the state, and you can register to vote on Election Day. Because you see, thanks to Democrats, independents here in the state who believe in democracy, and thanks to the many people who fought to free up voting rights in the state by putting voting rights on the ballot a few years ago, we've made it more convenient for people to participate in our democracy. Not to make it more difficult, not to make it just accessible for the few, but to make it accessible for as many people as possible. In fact, thanks to Michigan Democrats in Lansing, election clerks can now prepare ballots ahead of Election Day, making it easier for them to count and announce results in a quicker fashion. You see, that's what can happen when you get Democrats in control of your state government. Let's take gun safety laws, for example. After the tragic shootings that happened at Oxford High School and Michigan State University, Democrats used their majority in Lansing to do some good, to expand background checks for those purchasing guns, to make it harder for domestic abusers to purchase new guns, to pass safe storage laws, and to pass red flag laws. No one ever said that those laws would stop every shooting, as we've learned too well here in the state, but it's giving law enforcement and the courts another tool to help protect people. Because if one life can be saved through gun safety measures, and if we can just put a dent in the gun violence epidemic that seems to be a unique problem in this country, then guess what? We're doing our jobs. But more must be done. Because as of this recording, news is breaking of a school shooting that happened in another place in America. At least 4 people were killed and 9 others wounded Wednesday in a school shooting an hour outside of Atlanta. One suspect was alive and taken into custody following the gunfire at Appalachie High School, according to the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. The suspect is a teenager, multiple senior law enforcement officials told NBC News, although it's unclear whether the suspect is affiliated with the school. Everyone, this doesn't have to be the case. We could do more to ensure the safety of all people, gun owners, non-gun owners, everybody, because everybody deserves to enjoy the liberty of life and the pursuit of happiness. We deserve to have the pursuit of happiness from the gun epidemic problem we are having here in the United States of America. We need more money devoted to mental health services, of course, but we're not the only country in the world that has a mental health problem. We have a gun violence problem. Now, we could have reinstated the assault weapons ban, but Senate Republicans blocked that from ever happening. And I know that Vice President Harris will push for an assault weapons ban renewal once she gets in office, because as she said moments after the shooting while at a campaign stop,
but this is just a senseless tragedy on top of so many senseless tragedies. And it's just outrageous that every day in our country, in the United States of America, that parents have to send their children to school worried about whether or not their child will come home alive. It's senseless. It is. We've got to stop it. And we have to end this epidemic of gun violence in our country once and for all. You know, it doesn't have to be this way.
You see, she gets it. And Harris wants to save lives, unlike those who are beholden to an extreme MAGA fringe and gun manufacturing lobby, such as this guy.
It's just horrible to see that happening. That's just horrible. So surprising to see it here. But have to get over it. We have to move forward.
That was Dear Leader Trump telling Iowans to get over it after a school shooting there last January killed a student and injured seven others by a 17-year-old student who attended the high school, and he would eventually kill himself with a self-inflicted gunshot wound. But that's what Trump said after the shooting. Just get over it. And you'd think after surviving an assassination attempt, maybe he would have also a change of mind? I remember when people said, oh, get ready for a new Donald Trump after the shooting. That didn't happen. Please, don't forget, this is the same guy who told the National Rifle Association last year that America doesn't have a gun problem. That's what he said. America doesn't have a gun problem. But instead, he said, and weirdly, he said, that Democrats were to blame. Mental illness was to blame. Marijuana was to blame. Okay. And the transgender community was to blame for all the violence. That's the guy the corporate media are hoping to install back into the White House, because with him, they see high ratings, they see book deals, they see money, 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 and they see more clicks on stories, since chaos creates more cash for them. Who cares about gun violence or democracy crumbling, just as long as they get their corporate tax cuts? Case in point, I was beginning my day on Sunday and had ABC's Good Morning America on just to hear some of their headlines and for background noise, and they announced a new ABC poll that had just been released. So what you're about to hear is Good Morning America's Whit Johnson talking with ABC political correspondent Jonathan Karl, and listen to Jonathan Karl's description of this new presidential poll. Listen.
Let's bring in ABC's Jonathan Karl, who'll be hosting This Week later this morning. John, good morning to you. Always great to have you. So we have this new ABC News Ipsos poll out this morning. What do the numbers tell us about the state of the race? And did Vice President Harris get much of a bump after the Democratic convention?
Well, Whit, it shows that this race is very steady. Vice President Harris had a bump after she became the nominee, but the numbers are almost unchanged from before the convention. There you see them. 52% for Harris, 46% for Trump. Now, keep in mind, that is just barely outside the margin of error, Whit. And as you well remember, in 2016, Hillary Clinton won the national vote but lost to the White House. So that really shows you a race that is very close to statistically tied.
I mean, wow. Just listen to how Jonathan Karl there packaged his remarks. First, he talks about how the race has been steady, but that Harris received no post-election bump. I mean, okay, first of all, she erased Trump's once so-called insurmountable lead. And I was told by so many in the hand-wringing corporate press and the countless right-wing MAGA bro types out there in the media that Harris would fall flat on her face at the convention. Well, guess what? She didn't. And the numbers are showing that she solidified her numbers across the country. Second, did you hear Jonathan Karl and how he strained to make this latest poll stick with his horse race narrative? I mean, even though Harris has a 6-point lead in their poll, which is outside the poll's margin of error, I mean, my God. But third, Karl then stresses that while Harris's lead is outside the margin of error, it's barely outside the margin of error. I mean, what clowns these mainstream corporate media types make themselves out to be? Do you honestly believe? I mean, ask yourself, do you really believe if Trump were the one up by 6 points at this point in the election, that Jonathan Karl would have said Trump's up by 6 points, but that's just barely outside the poll's margin of error? I mean, come on, you know better. Hardly, right? He'd be saying, what a disaster Harris has turned out to be. And maybe, just maybe, the Democrats should have stuck with Biden. You know I'm right about that. Now, in Michigan, we've got a tight one. Both the latest Epic MRA poll and a new Detroit News WDIV-TV poll in Detroit shows Trump leading Harris by a single point. Both polls are showing Trump leading by a single point. Now, that's much better than where we were in late July when he was holding about a 6 to 7 point lead. So Harris has erased that lead into a statistical dead heat. And there are some other polls that were taken this past week showing Harris with the lead in Michigan. But still, it shows more work must be done. And that joy, while great, joy alone won't win this election. It helped. Don't get me wrong. I love that she's pushing for a joyful campaign because we've lived in a lot of misery with Trump being in the political world this last 8 years. But it's still going to take messaging, reaching out to get those to vote, and continuously showing what we progressives stand for while highlighting the threat to our basic freedoms that MAGA Republicans will bring us if they get back into power. On another good news note, though, Alyssa Slotkin is beating Florida Mike Rogers by a whopping 8 percentage points in the Michigan Senate race, according to that WDIV poll, which I believe is also a good sign for Harris and also for how Harris is energizing down-ballot Democrats across the state since we've got a huge election here for the state house. So it would really help us all if Kamala Harris has some strong coattails. And also for the state Supreme Court races as well, which I'm going to talk about here in a minute. But Dear Leader Trump made a visit recently to Howell, Michigan, just a couple of weeks after Nazis marched in Howell yelling, "We love Hitler, we love Trump." You recall that Trump's visit was supposed to be a quote-unquote press conference, but he only answered one question after ranting and raving about Kamala Harris, the border, and how no one can apparently get a loaf of bread anymore without getting raped. And by the way, my question to Donald Trump, if that would have been a press conference, would have been, hey, is that true? Because maybe we should ask E. Jean Carroll if that's true when it comes to Donald Trump, who was found liable for sexually assaulting her. Seems like a logical question to me. Anyway, the event was held by Livingston County Sheriff Mike Murphy. Oh, that's right. It was being held at his office. Sheriff Murphy told Michigan Advance's John King that the event was not to be a political event, but just a press conference. Well, it wasn't. And now Sheriff Murphy is in a bit of trouble and is being investigated for whether or not he violated Michigan's campaign finance law by allowing public resources to be used for a political event, an event in which Dear Leader talked about crime and safety. Cognitive dissonance and irony are never dead when it comes to MAGA Republicans. Now, if you've listened to this podcast, Sheriff Murphy's been brought up here a few times. You'll remember when he tried to take away the free speech rights of Livingston County progressive activist Casey Helton when she rightly called out health professionals who spewed COVID misinformation while at a public meeting. And then Murphy also declared that he would not enforce any of the gun safety laws that Democrats passed into law here in Michigan, only for us to then learn a little later that he has indeed used the red flag law a few times since its passage. So Michigan Advance's John King will join us to talk about that. Plus, John recently filed a story about a MAGA Republican consultant who's been charged here in Michigan with campaign finance law violations, including a felony charge, but now is helping provide some more dark money contributions to MAGA Republican State Representative Andrew Fink, who's running for the state Supreme Court. Now, Fink is an election denier who attended a Stop the Steal rally at the state capitol on January 6th of 2021. So right there, he showed a radical disdain for democracy. Fink also voted on bills to make it harder to vote in Michigan. Oh, wow, what a shock. And he says that he loves Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas as well. Clarence Thomas, you know, the same guy who's been embroiled in scandal after scandal after documents proved how he's received lavish gifts from right-wing billionaires. And Fink wants to roll back abortion rights and LGBTQ plus rights. This guy does not deserve to be on the Michigan Supreme Court, which just ruled, by the way, if you recall, last month, that Republicans in the state acted unconstitutionally when they blocked minimum wage hikes and earned paid sick leave back in 2018. You really think that Andrew Fink would have voted in favor of the people? I think you know which way he would have fallen. That's why it's imperative that you tell everyone you know to vote for Justice Kira Harris Bolden and Kimberly Ann Thomas for the state Supreme Court this year. Those races are also vital for Michigan's future. Coming up, John King with Michigan Advance. And hey, Rich, let me just say a quick thank you for everything that you've done with leftoflansing.com. You're listening to LOL.
It's Michigan's premier progressive podcast, Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. If Pat's brand of progressive pontifications is getting you all riled up and you'd like to give him a piece of your mind, or if you'd like to tell him he's doing an outstanding job and to keep up the great work, just email him. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Do you have stories you think Pat must know about or guest ideas for future episodes? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Want to share your thoughts on how to grow Michigan's population or which flavor of Faygo Pop is the best? It's Rockin' Rye, by the way. Just email Pat, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, here's Pat.
Let's continue our talk about how Livingston County Sheriff Mike Murphy remains in hot water over the Trump visit in Livingston County a couple of weeks ago. And then we'll focus on giving you a little more background on MAGA state representative and state Supreme Court nominee Andrew Fink. The perfect person, I think, though, to talk about those subjects and more is John King. John's had his ear to the ground when it comes to Livingston County's political scene, thanks to his years in news talk radio biz in Livingston. But now he's a full-time reporter with Michigan Advance, my favorite online outlet when it comes to Michigan's political coverage. So, John King, thank you for coming back here to the Left of Lansing, and I hope all is well.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I gave some broad details of Livingston County Sheriff Mike Murphy's decision to resign from a local domestic violence prevention agency, which, as you wrote, accepted his resignation and said that the Trump visit had caused a distraction to the agency's efforts there on a daily basis. So, John, you attended the visit. Can you first just talk about the event and how it was billed as a press conference, but it really wasn't, and how Murphy then got himself into some trouble here with this whole event?
Yeah, I mean, when they announced that the former president was going to be visiting and would be having a press conference at the Livingston County Sheriff's Office, I mean, immediately the questions arose. This is prior to the visit. Immediately questions arose. Well, wait a minute. We're 2 months out from November. This is obviously a very political event. How can you hold this on taxpayer-funded facilities and grounds? And I asked Murphy this directly, and his answer was, well, the former president is coming to speak about crime and safety, and anytime you can have somebody who's potentially going to be, in the White House address members of law enforcement on this subject, this is something that, we think is a good thing, and essentially dodged the question. When the day came for the event itself, I was very curious about how this is going to be carried out. They held it in basically a storage shed, which stores vehicles for the sheriff's department, like its tactical vehicle and, emergency response things. They moved all those vehicles out into an adjacent parking lot. And this, you can imagine a storage shed it's a pole barn, but it was immaculately cleaned. There were campaign banners everywhere, 75 invited guests, the vast majority of whom I could tell were all GOP supporters and donors. The muckety mucks of Livingston County Republicans were the invited guests. And it was clearly a campaign event. The ex-president came out, went on his usual litany tour of grievances for, nearly an hour. The whole time I'm there going, where's this press conference? When are we going to get to the press conference part? Right at the very end, a reporter up front yelled out a question, which was the first question on everyone's mind, which was, hey, you purposely came to Howell 2 weeks after white supremacists marched through Howell shouting, we love Hitler, we love Trump. Speak to that. And he, of course, diverted from that and basically tried to say, oh, Biden came here in 2021. So somehow that's connected. And I'm like, well, I don't recall them coming through Howell when Biden visited in 2021 saying, we love Hitler, we love Biden. Right. So that was the extent of your quote unquote press conference. Clearly a campaign event. We've seen since that there was a TikTok video that was recorded of Trump in that Livingston County Sheriff's barn that ran on Trump's TikTok account. Very political, obviously a political ad filmed on taxpayer-funded grounds. And then today, the National Republican Senatorial Committee has just released an ad buy for Michigan featuring Livingston County Sheriff Mike Murphy, who is endorsing Trump and Mike Rogers for Senate. Not a surprise, but nonetheless, Mike Murphy is featured prominently in these ads, further underlining the absolute political nature of this visit.
So you knew pretty quickly that this was just going to be a campaign event, not a press conference.
Before the event itself, it was hard for me to see how it wouldn't be political. But as soon as I got inside the pole barn and you see campaign banners hanging, you go, okay. I mean, there could have been the pretext of a press conference. I mean, to me, this is just my opinion. That's all this is.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do something like this, to me, if you really want to dodge the legal stuff, I mean, yes, lawyers can parse it out, but if you really want to dodge the overt, obvious partisan nature of it, first of all, no campaign banners. Secondly, you have an actual Q&A. I mean, Trump can still come and do his, you know, grievance tour and go through all the greatest hits. And, you know, some of the things he said, by the way, just completely nonsensical, irrational. He's talking about a world that doesn't exist. You know, people are getting raped going to the store to get bread. You're like, right. Oh, okay. He can go through all that. And at the very end, you have a quick Q&A, maybe five questions. If you were with the campaign, you could have picked five reporters and said, all right, we're going to give you five questions, you know, but they didn't even go through the pretense of that, not even the pretense of it. So going into it, I was skeptical once I saw the, and it wasn't just me, by the way, like every reporter there could see what was obvious in right in front of their face.
All right, John, you mentioned the one question Trump fielded during that quote-unquote press conference, and the person, as you just said, asked Trump if he had any reservations about visiting Howell just after white supremacists marched there recently, and Trump responded that Biden, of course, visited there in 2021, and it served as sort of a gotcha moment for Trump to the press. And I was reading some in the progressive social media sphere, some of the progressive social media circles, I guess, who were thinking that it was all a setup question, a question that he knew in advance. So since you were there, just to clear it all up, did you know the person who asked the question? I mean, you don't have to say who it was, but did you know the person who asked the question? And did it seem like it was a setup question to you or a real legitimate one? Because as you said, it was on the forefront of many reporters' minds there that day.
Right. I'll be honest with you. I don't know. And in fact, where I was, the reporter wasn't mic'd up, and I didn't quite hear what she said. I got a couple words of it, and so I got the gist of what the question was. I understood that it was about the white supremacists. It wasn't until later that I went back to the audio and listened to the audio, because I was plugged into the audio box and was recording all the audio. Only when I went back could I actually hear the full question. I'll be honest with you, my sense was the question was asked earnestly. I don't know that the question itself was a setup. However, yes, just my opinion. He had clearly been coached on, they're going to ask this question. Here's your answer. And I will say this, as an answer, just from a purely political, it was a good answer. I mean, it was a good answer in the sense of, how else could you answer that question?
Right.
Whoever in the campaign or whoever came up with that answer, yeah, okay. It's shifting it onto the other guy. And he did it, and it was like a mic drop moment in their mind, because he sort of laughed and then said, you know, goodbye, everybody, and walked out the door. And so in his mind and in his supporters' minds, that was this mic drop moment. Of course, it completely, you know, ignores the actual import of the question itself. But I do think the question was asked earnestly, even if that particular reporter was asking it as part of the setup, which I didn't sense that it was. It was going to be asked either way. I mean, whoever was going to ask it was going to ask it. And so his answer would have been the same either way.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was too. I was like, hey, look, I like a good conspiracy too from time to time. But I said, no, I think that's probably going to be the first question by many reporters there. And if I were there, it would have been my first probably as well. Let's get back though to Sheriff Murphy here, Livingston County Sheriff Murphy. He has resigned now from a local domestic violence prevention agency. And even before Trump's visit happened, and quickly after it happened, as you said, there were many critics of the whole event who were also saying that he was breaking some parts of the Michigan Campaign Act. Now, look, he's not the only sheriff, obviously, to endorse a particular candidate for office, especially a presidential candidate for office. But did he really get in trouble here for the most part because the event turned out to be more of a campaign event on county grounds, on police grounds, and not a press conference? Because as you wrote, the whole premise of the event was to talk about crime and safety, but it was essentially just another one of Trump's campaign speeches, right?
You know, I mean, the answer to that question is yes. My sense of it is this, is that nobody but nobody was under any impression that Mike Murphy wasn't supporting Donald Trump.
Right.
So that's, you know, everyone was clear on that. That wasn't some shock like, oh, my God, I'm, you know, nobody was clutching their pearls over that. What it was, and I believe this was the case for La Casa, the organization, it was the fact that he had done so publicly, hosting Trump at the sheriff's office, which, okay, yes, from the campaign finance issue that, yes, this is taxpayer-funded facilities and this should not be occurring. There, you know, it's illegal. It's breaking the law, which, you know, ironically, here's an event about, you know, crime and safety, and it in itself is illegal. Hosting a convicted felon. Great. Perfect. But It's the fact that it was the sheriff's office. It wasn't animal control. It wasn't the road division. It was the sheriff's office. This is law and order in Livingston County. And the fact that you have this individual coming into that venue, there's significance to that. And that this person who has been found by a jury liable for sexual assault, a jury of peers, you know, they can claim partisan all they want, but I mean, the jury found what the jury found. And for him to have done this on sheriff's office property, I think it was just a step too far for individuals within La Casa. And you have to understand La Casa, and full disclosure, I should say this. I, for several years, served on the board of La Casa as well. And I served with Mike Murphy on the board. As for a while there, he was actually chair of the board of La Casa. And I can tell you, having been involved with this organization for many years, they deal with some of the most horrendous instances of sexual violence, of assault, domestic violence that you can imagine against women and children and men. And the survivors who they have to counsel and nurture to try and come to some sort of reckoning with what has occurred to them and trying to come out of this shell and reemerge into society. It was a betrayal to many people who are donors, volunteers, and employees of that organization to see somebody who previously had chaired the board, understood the organization, had been a fervent supporter of La Casa, for him to host this particular individual on the sheriff's office property. I think altogether those circumstances combined to make it like it's just too much. And so I think that's what eventually led to Tuesday's resignation.
Okay, so it did have something to do with Trump being found liable for sexual assault. That did play a role in this whole thing.
That's my opinion. I mean, I don't know this for a fact.
Okay.
The circumstances by which he was essentially forced to resign. I mean, I heard a lot of behind the scenes stuff, and it's just that. It's just rumor. Talking to some individuals, as I said, I had connections to the organization, so I do know some individuals there. And talking to folks, I got the sense that almost immediately after the press conference, there was outrage that was communicated to the upper echelons by not just donors, but also volunteers and employees who were like, why are we letting this be associated with us? It took until actually Tuesday for there to finally be a resolution. I think there was a lot of back and forth. Livingston County, again, to no one's surprise, very conservative, red county. La Casa has existed here for 40 plus years, not always in an environment that's been welcoming to a certain extent. And so I think that the management there understood this was a big step to take. So there was some maneuvering behind the scenes, let's put it that way, for the last several weeks that led to Tuesday's resignation.
Okay, gotcha. You also shared some reminders about how Sheriff Mike Murphy has been in the news for the past few years, maybe for all the wrong reasons. For instance, you mentioned the time he wanted to charge progressive activists in Livingston County and a good friend of this podcast, Casey Hilton, who is a nurse, who posted tweets calling out those in the healthcare industry who spread COVID misinformation at a public meeting. Now, those charges were dropped, and then Murphy also proclaimed that he would not follow any of the gun safety laws passed by those Michigan Democrats last year, which did earn him some praise from the MAGA majority on the County Board of Commissioners. So, John, for those of us on the outside here, has Mike Murphy always worn his right-wing politics on his sleeve? Or did this become more of a recent revelation? Again, I know that he has been involved in politics up there, but again, this right-wing stance that he's been taking on some of these issues, did that become a more recent revelation?
Yes and no. You know, he was previously the chair of the Livingston County Republican Party. And so, I mean, this many years ago, but nonetheless. So no one, again, the idea that he wasn't a Republican, a supporter of Republicans, everyone understood this and knew this. And being the chair of the Livingston County Republican Party, and I believe he was under sheriff at the time, but he was in office, again, certainly highlighted the partisan nature of that. But I felt that, and again, my opinion, that he sort of was walking a fine line. Everyone understood where his political allegiances lay, but he also understood where his responsibilities to the office that he held were. I think that you could make a case that that line has gotten thinner and thinner and thinner. And to the extent of like those examples, that those two examples stand out, essentially wanting to charge someone for speech it causes great questions to go, well, wait a second. And then the idea that I'm not going to enforce the law because I don't agree that it's constitutional. I'm sorry, who are you? You're a county sheriff. I'm sorry. It does call into question, I think, the willingness to be more partisan. But let's be fair to Mike Murphy. Everything is more partisan now.
Yeah.
Everything is much more overt and political and pushed to the center. So I don't want to be unfair to him and say, like, he's the only one. I think you see it everywhere. And it's unfortunate, especially when it comes to the courts and law enforcement. This is a real problem, in my opinion. This is where we have to find a way to get these particular parts of our civic structure. We need to find a way to make them less partisan. And unfortunately, I think we're heading in the wrong direction.
Well, just to switch over now, because you mentioned the courts, if you don't mind, in our final few moments here, I'd just like to highlight another great story that you wrote on Republican State Representative Andrew Fink, who is running for one of the vacant state Supreme Court seats here this November. I covered him and his extreme past actions in the last segment, including being an election denier who also attended a Stop the Steal rally at the Michigan State Capitol on January 6th of 2021. But, John, you did some excellent work in a piece titled "Consultant Charged in Dark Money Scheme is Aiding GOP Michigan Supreme Court Nominee's Campaign." And in the story, John, you write about a person named Heather Lombardini. Can you talk about her a bit and how she's now involved in Fink's Supreme Court race?
Yeah, Lombardini is one of the founders of a consulting firm called Bright Spark Strategies. She was charged, along with another woman, in February by Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel with fundraising violations that were related to the Unlock Michigan petition, which, if you remember, that sought to repeal the emergency powers that Governor Gretchen Whitmer was using to try and curb COVID-19. Now, the Supreme Court later said those emergency powers were unconstitutional, but prior to that ruling, there was this buildup to put something on the ballot, this Unlock Michigan petition that would, you know, basically by voter initiative would remove her powers to do that. What basically the attorney general found was that Lombardini was basically laundering money. And this becomes very complicated because our campaign finance is very complicated.
Yes.
But essentially, she was laundering money that was not to be used for express political purposes. It was coming into a 501c4 that she operated, which was money that is supposed to be used for voter education, issue ads, things like that, where you cannot overtly express you must vote yes or no for this person or this law or whatever. It's supposed to be issue ads only, educational stuff. And so the money that was coming to that 501c4, she was essentially laundering it and then putting it into the Unlock Michigan account. So that's what she was charged with. One of those counts was a felony. She's still facing those charges, presumed innocent, but nonetheless, she has been charged with those counts. It came to our attention that she was heavily involved in Fink's campaign. All you had to do was just check the database to see that Fink's campaign was paying Bright Spark Strategies a lot of money. $28,000 in July alone was going to Bright Spark Strategies. Now, Bright Spark Strategies, although Lombardini was a founder of that, there's other principals that are involved there. And so you're like, well, we need to make sure that, you know, maybe it's not Lombardini. But indeed, we found a single $75 payment that went directly to Lombardini, and it was listed as campaign travel reimbursement. So directly placing her amidst Fink's campaign. Plus, there are other social media posts from the recent convention in Flint showing her on the floor at the Dart Center advocating for Fink, and other things that showed that she was clearly in support of his campaign. So she's being paid by the campaign. She's supporting the campaign. You know, I just asked Representative Fink, what does it say? Do you have any comment about the fact that you're running for, you know, one of the highest judicial seats in the state, and yet you have this person who is facing a felony charge running your campaign? And his answer was very lawyer-like. You know, our justice system affords everyone the right to due process and the presumption of innocence until proven guilty. Yes, this is very true. No one is doubting that. And I'm sure Ms. Lombardini will exercise all of her due process rights. Of course, that completely avoids the question of, as somebody who is seeking, you know, a Michigan Supreme Court seat, why would you engage this individual particularly? And as the story goes on to say, it may be indeed because of Lombardini's success in eliciting these 501c4 dollars, the very thing that she's sort of charged with. The fact that she has these connections and can bring in money. And the thing you have to remember, the thing about 501c4s is they don't have to disclose their donors. That's the key point here. So you don't know where that money's coming from, whereas 501c3s do. Readers can take away from that whatever they want. It's plainly clear, that this is a person who has been charged. That case is being adjudicated, and she's also running his Supreme Court campaign. Take from that what you will.
And as I did, but it is a great story. And really, for me, John just helps shed more light on those behind the scenes, the people behind the scenes who are funding certain politicians and their motivations for funding those certain individuals, and, you know, how corruption is celebrated by some of those individuals. Listen, John, I have taken up way too much of your time, but I have to ask you, are you planning on sleeping much for the next 2 months as we gear up for the election this November?
Lots of naps. Yeah, I'll sleep where I can get it. But yeah, it will be an interesting run up to November 5th.
That's right. All right. Well, listen, the work you do and everybody does at Michigan Advance is top notch. And I always begin my day. I always say this here on the podcast. I begin my day reading the stories that all of you post at MichiganAdvance.com. And I don't know how, John, you keep going at the rate that you're going, because you're posting story after story. But I love it. So, John, thanks for coming back here on Left of Lansing, and keep up the great work.
Oh, thank you. Always a pleasure.
He enjoys watching sporting events from years ago. He can recite most of the 1984 Detroit Tigers lineup. He will go to the mat in saying Michigan has produced some of the greatest music in the past 60 years. But most of all, he enjoys the loyalty of a fine dog while sipping on a tasty Michigan beer. Oh, and he loves talking about politics, if you haven't been able to tell yet. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Need more Pat? Visit and subscribe to leftoflansing.com. Now, back to Pat.
Thanks again to John King from Michigan Advance for talking with us here this week. And if you have not checked out the work at MichiganAdvance.com, please do, really, please do, because they've got some excellent reporting, straight reporting from their entire staff. And they also provide some excellent and pointed progressive commentary in their opinion section. So check out MichiganAdvance.com. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. We didn't have enough time to cover this, but there was another story that John King reported on this week, and it coincides with something I've been covering here ever since the Michigan Supreme Court ruling, which said that the Republican majority in Lansing back in 2018 acted unconstitutionally when it watered down minimum wage and earned paid sick leave ballot initiatives. Now, in his article titled, Michigan Drops to 31st Among States for Workers' Rights in 2024 Oxfam Survey, John writes how the global organization focused on inequality and poverty dropped Michigan 5 spots from last year's survey. Not good. According to Oxfam's Best States to Work Index, Michigan dropped in this year's survey due to the state's minimum wage, which was just $10.33, or 26.8% of the cost of living for a working family. By comparison, Illinois, which was ranked highest in the Great Lakes region at number 7, has a minimum wage of $14 per hour, or 34% of what it takes a family of 4 to cover basic costs in the state. Michigan was also ranked down for not allowing municipalities to independently raise minimum wages, unlike the District of Columbia and California, which were ranked number 1 and number 2, respectively. So that's why Michigan dropped to number 31, but Oxfam did note the Michigan Supreme Court decision and how that'll only help Michigan's ranking next year. But if there's a more stark illustration as to how Michigan Republicans have nothing but disdain, pure disdain for the working class in this state, that survey proves it. And look no further than how MAGA Michigan Republican leadership is declaring how they want to once again water down the higher minimum wage standard and paid sick leave bills. Just notice how they're doing it. They care more about management. They don't care about the workers whatsoever, kind of like their dear leader Trump. Now, according to John's story, Oxfam says Minnesota distinguished itself from the other states in the Plains region, and the report noted that Minnesota had a busy legislative session in 2023, presided by Governor Tim Walz, the Democratic Party's vice presidential nominee. And John writes that since the last Oxfam report, Minnesota laws went into effect that eliminated the sub-minimum tipped wage, provided paid leave, and created a warehouse worker protection policy, which helped push it. to number 11 from number 17 in 2023. So thanks to Tim Walz, Minnesota is viewed as one of the best states to live in for workers, and that once again solidifies my belief that Kamala Harris did a fantastic job picking him to be her running mate. By the way, the survey ranked the District of Columbia as the best quote-unquote states to work in, followed by, like I said, California, Oregon, New York, and Washington. As for the worst states for workers, North Carolina falls at the very bottom of the index as the worst state for the third year in a row, followed by Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama, and South Carolina. My, my, my. So it seems to me that blue states are the ones who care more about their workers and care about workers' rights and union rights and women's rights. They care about working families. Meanwhile, it seems to me that the red states care very little about the health and economic well-being about their workers and their families. And this surprises who exactly?
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for another edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks to Michigan Advance's John King for being on this week and talking about his stories on Dear Leader's visit to Howell recently and the dark money forces backing right-wing authoritarian MAGA State Supreme Court Justice nominee Andrew Fink. I'll provide links to those articles on leftoflansing.com and wherever you get your podcast. And please don't forget to subscribe to Left of Lansing and give it a 5-star review. And please don't forget to subscribe to Left of Lansing on YouTube as well. Okay, I wrapped up last week's show by giving you my season win totals for Michigan, Michigan State, and Central Michigan football. So that means this week I will conclude by giving you my win total for your Detroit Lions. I think the Lions will finish the year 12-5 again. However, I think they'll be an even better 12-5 team this year and ready for the playoffs with an improved secondary. And watch out for wide receiver Jameson Williams, who I predict will have over 1,000 yards receiving and 11 touchdowns this year. So I foresee another trip to the NFC Championship game, and this time the Lions make it to the next round. Oh, I can't wait for Sunday night. And I can't wait to talk with you again next week. Until then, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.